Good morning and welcome to ASI Radio's Tuesday morning show. I'm Joe Haley and I will be your special guest host today as three of our regulars, including Melinda Lagos, our hostess with the mostest, are on their way to San Diego for the ASI show in San Diego. Very first show for ASI in California.
Woohoo!
Ooh, okay. Well, thank you for the woohoo. But we do have some of our regulars in studio today. To my left, and she's not in her regular seat, is the editor of Supplier Global Resource, Michelle Bell. Now, Michelle, with an empty office, what is it that you're going to do? Everyone's out in California.
I'm going to clean my office, okay. And I have work to catch up on.
Okay. Very good. Also joining us today.
Was it the answer I think he was expecting?
I wasn't sure how to respond.
Also with us today.
What did you think I was going to, like, swing from chandeliers and, like, have cocktails all day?
I'm not sure. We have Dave Vagnoni, who is a staff writer for Counselor and Stitches Magazine. He's also the staff writer for Counselor Promogram, and he's the guy that we see on the Counselor Promogram industry updates on Thursday.
That's
Dave,
me.
How are you?
I'm well, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you won't physically be in San Diego. No. However, anyone who goes to a keynote session will be seeing you.
That's right. I do those intros. And Joe, you helped me film them.
Well, Dave.
Well, without your help, they just wouldn't look as nice.
But without you, they wouldn't sound as nice.
Thank you.
All right, we're moving on over here. Next to Dave is our editor of Stitches Magazine and the director of ASI Education, Nicole Rylander. Nicole, how are you?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
I'm very good. Now, as director of education, you're someone who's in charge of crafting all those sessions that get put on at shows. With this being the first one in San Diego, thumbs up or down with the education sessions we're offering tomorrow?
Thumbs up, of course.
Okay. Any suggestions for anyone what they should be attending?
Well, definitely the new distributor track. People should attend that. But we have a lot of emphasis on sales and marketing, which are pretty hot topics. So check out those tracks.
And we're also offering supplier education, too.
Yeah, we've definitely beefed that up for 2010. So suppliers should try to get on the education sessions if they can while they're not on the show floor.
Okay. As usual, rocking the sound effects and the board is Steve Hawk. He gives himself applause. The only one who gets it. Steve, how close are we to the Philly Beer Geek competition?
Three more months.
Steve is a master brewer and just a beer geek, a beer aficionado. And rocking the phones and the feed is our own Vinny Driscoll. Now, Vin, spring training has started for baseball. What do you think? Early prediction, thumbs up or down? Does your team have a shot of making it to the playoffs?
Who's his team?
The Yankees. Okay. He says they do. Okay, our phone lines are open, so give us a call. 215-953-4979. We're going to talk about new wearables trends and how to sell them, or you can send an email question to radio@asicentral.com. If we put you on the air, you will score a $25 Visa gift card. But before we get started with anything, Michelle's going to give us a rundown of what we have on today's show.
I certainly will. Well, today we have Nicole's going to talk about wearables and new trends and new markets to sell into. She's also going to discuss top mistakes salespeople make in their presentations. Dave's going to talk about some business management practices that should be axed right away. Joe's going to discuss the Olympics' quirkiest sponsors,
as he only can as a quirky little man. Okay.
And I am going to discuss why you should avoid office hookups.
Mm. Ooh, good topic.
How about that?
Good topic.
Oh, we'll make it to that one.
Yes. And now, before anything else, we have Dave with the news.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Good morning again, everyone. We begin with some breaking news. CoreVest has reportedly announced it has signed a letter of intent to sell its business. Additionally, the company plans to lay off more than 200 workers in April as it transitions through an ownership change. CoreVest, of course, is the parent company of Advolite, It's All Greek to Me, and Toppers. More on this story later today. In Promogram, also today, a leadership change at top 40 distributor Accolade Reaction. Counselor has learned that company president Mark Roy has resigned. Accolade's owners, Golftown, will announce a replacement for Roy. We're told in the next 24 hours. We'll stay on top of this story for you as well. Next up, an acquisition involving online-driven distributors. Sources tell Counselor that California-based Branders.com has purchased Oregon-based PromoPeddler.com. Terms of the deal were not disclosed, but sources say the acquisition was completed within 10 days after negotiations with another potential buyer broke down. Continuing on, a conclusion to a four-year industry legal dispute. A federal jury has decided in favor of AdMagic, ruling that its corporate name and websites do not infringe upon the trademark rights of fellow distributor Advertising Magic, Inc. We're told an appeal in the case is not likely. And finally today, on a much lighter note, be sure to check out the latest episode of The Joe Show, where Joe features something called a woozy. I promise you won't want to miss this episode. And there you have it, the industry news for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2010.
Thank you, Dave. And you do have to tune in to find out what the woozy is. I'm not going to tell you.
Do you wear the slanket while you show off the woozy?
I do not wear the slanket while I show the woozy, but we do talk about the woozy.
Thank goodness.
All right, we're going to go. We're going to get this show started. Nicole's going to talk about some upcoming new wearables trends.
All right. So guess what the number one accessory is for 2010 for women?
Bracelets.
No.
Bandanas.
No. Michelle.
Ankle bracelets.
No.
Oh, God.
When you think accessories, I mean, it
headbands,
can be something you
purses,
wear.
Purses.
Watches.
Purse.
Socks.
Socks.
If you, if
not
you
an
look,
accessory.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, it is. It is. Anyway.
Socks for, like, special women?
No. Like a lot of women, you know, with the short little, like, ankle booties and heels, women, if you look in Vogue, they're actually wearing socks. So that's kind of an interesting little twist there. You might want to take some socks. There are industry suppliers who have different socks, and some of them are kind of cool and fashion forward. So that might be something, you know, if you've got young, you're looking at me like
with a,
there's
with
no
a, with a
like,
smirk
a
and a scowl.
Yeah,
a smell.
I don't think
I'm giving you a smile.
I don't think I would do that, but that is actually a top accessory that we're seeing on the runways. Something that's a little bit more normal. In 2009, we saw longer length tunics and shirts for women, and it was exciting because I'd walk the show floors and see a lot of those. So that's back for 2010. We're still seeing the long tunics, but they've got this easy care element, so you can throw them in the washer and dryer, pull them out, shove them in your suitcase, take them out, and they're going to be wrinkle-free. So we'll probably be seeing more of that. All right, hot colors. Neutrals like beige, flesh, white, and khaki with flashes of, Joe, your favorite color, turquoise, spicy yellow, and apricot. We're seeing a lot of busy patterns on the runway, and those are actually translating into this industry. So you're going to see a lot of stripes, overlapping squares, checks. Actually, in a lot of wovens, you know, wovens are pretty traditional, but you see some cool patterns like you see.
Like herringbone? You mean,
yeah, like that? Yeah, and things like that.
Or plaid.
You know, it is, but I don't think it's as big as it was in 2009. Yeah, although denim and chambray. Chambray is that kind of lighter form of denim, which I would never wear, but that's hot in accessories and in bags and apparel. Couple other things. Eco fabrics are still hot with a lot of high-tech performance features. And also the burned edges, unraveled looks, vintage kind of distressed stuff, that's still hot. So that's going to be seen throughout 2010.
How much of this will translate to the industry here? Like a tunic. You don't see a lot of that in supplier catalogs.
Well, you actually do, though, because when you walk the show floor, there are suppliers like Bella and Rucci Traders and ones that actually do offer that alternative apparel. So we do see that. And you also see the longer length shirts for women as well. And, you know, a lot of the burned out looks and the distress and the slub jerseys, you do see that. It's just more, I think, for a select kind of subset. But, you know, those are the trends that we are seeing translate. So that's good.
So tunics. Tunics and socks.
Yeah. Not all of us wear polo shirts, Joe. So and wovens.
Okay.
So,
well,
you know,
okay.
I'm excited.
That's okay. I like polyester. I love the new polyester. It's so lightweight. It's so comfortable. And it's not your 1970s itchy old polyester. So
no, not what you wore during your soap opera days, Joe.
Okay, well, thank you, Nicole. We are going to stay on this wearables topic and go to our phone lines because we do have a few callers on the line now. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get in, you still have time at 215-953-4979. And don't forget, send us an email to radio@asicentral.com. But we're going to go to line one where we have Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great.
You have a question?
I do. I'm new to selling apparel, and I was just wondering if you could give me some suggestions for markets that may be easy to sell to.
Well, the markets that are perennially good are healthcare, education, athletics, team sports, that kind of thing. I mean, they might be a little bit hard to penetrate, but those are the ones that are always buying. But some that actually you might want to try, we're seeing that a lot of small businesses, because they're trying to up their images, they're looking for uniform type wear. So you're not going to go and institute a whole uniform program, but, you know, a small business might have 20 employees. They're looking for polo shirts. They're looking for jackets. They're looking for hats with their logo. So you can create a mini uniform program for almost any local business that you have.
And Jennifer, we put together an article for the January Counselor, Top Markets for Apparel Sales in 2010. Another market I'd recommend would be financial. Mm-hmm. And you might not think financial, but financial companies are doing much better. And you could send higher-end apparel, like nice quality jackets, to financial companies. So think about that as well.
If you go to locally, a TD Bank, they all have some sort of uniform on in the TD Bank colors. Even the executives who are at that certain branch will have a TD Bank tie. I think also small cafes, small restaurants in the areas, they might be overlooked by their distributors. So go in there, pitch the idea as a uniform to have wait staffs looking uniform altogether. It just doesn't have to be a black polo. You could have a nice logo on it. And another suggestion I would have is get yourself to an ASI show where we have a full slate of education in Wearables University that will teach you a whole bunch of different things from markets to sell, what's hot in apparel and what's hot in decorating.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, stay on the line. Vinny will get your information and we'll get you out that Visa gift card. We are going to move on to line two where we have Katrina. Katrina, how are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you guys?
We're terrific. Do you have a question for us?
I do. Well, I know the San Diego show is happening soon, but I can't make it and I haven't been to any shows yet. So I was wondering if you had advice on what kind of colors and fabrics and imprinting methods are really hot right now.
Well, we definitely touched on some of the hot colors, you know, a lot of neutrals with pops of color like apricot and turquoise, Joe. And then the fabrics, you know, denim, chambray, fine jersey, eco fabrics, of course. But as far as decorating techniques, what's really hot lately is multimedia, you know, combining embroidery with applique. Combining sublimation with, say, rhinestones. It's really about creating that retail look. It's really about working with your decorator to create looks that are retail but are also cost-effective. That's something else, a tip that we're hearing. For example, somebody might want a whole embroidered jacket back, which, you know, Dave's looking at me like I wouldn't wear. But really, I mean, if you have a whole jacket back, it could be 200,000 stitches. And say an element is a basketball. So maybe you get applique and replace, you know, about 50,000 stitches. So it's cost effective. So what's really hot is going to the mall, looking at what's on the racks, looking at the runway, and figuring out ways to kind of translate that. I mean, of course, we hear people say, oh, you know, I sell to corporations. They don't want bling. They don't want full jacket backs. So what's hot for corporate, two things. Location, logo placement, you know, the left chest is, you know, it's still happening, but it's a little bit tired. So think about, you know, the collar, think about above the hem, think about the back yoke, and also think about tone on tone. So if you've got, you know, a polo, you might want to do a very tasteful tone-on-tone logo, which is the same color as the fabric or a little bit darker or lighter.
One of the things I would suggest is look at your industry publications, Wearables, Stitches, Counselor Magazine, go online to asicentral.com. There's a lot of information out there. Article-wise, we have some online education. We have webinars all the time on a bunch of different topics. So stay in touch with what we offer you in terms of getting educated with wearables.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. Well, we are going to move on. Right now, we're going to take a pause for a minute and hear a word from our sponsor, I Promote You.
This portion of ASI Radio is sponsored by I Promote You. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with I Promote You today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. I Promote You, the smart choice. For more information, call 800-850-3370 or email opportunities@ipromoteyou.com.
And welcome back to the program. We are going to go right back to Nicole Rollander. She's got a whole bunch of things she's got to talk about today. You have top mistakes that salespeople make in their presentations. Now, prior to getting started, there's a sales columnist, a sales author. His name's Dan Seidman, and he has written a book about kind of like presentation horror stories. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite ones is about two sales reps go to a client, so they get there early, so they're going to sit in their car and work over their presentation, but they stop at a 7-Eleven first, get Slurpees, a blue-collared one and a red-collared one. They sat there, drank these Slurpees. By the time they were ready to go in, they looked in the mirror, and their lips were blue and one lip was red, and they couldn't get out of it, so they looked like clowns. So be careful what you drink prior to a presentation.
That's part of the deal.
With that lead-in, go ahead, Nicole. Tell
us
what you have.
Right. You know, a lot of people, when we do education at the shows and on webinars, people are like, well, how do I overcome objections? How do I do this? How do I do that? But they don't really think about how they're delivering, how they're connecting with the people they're selling to. So that's kind of what this is about. So, for example, one thing you should never do – don't go in there and ramble. Like, don't go in there and say, well, let's talk about this trend and then let's do this and kind of like what I'm doing now. Like, don't ramble. Have a clear, you know, objectives for what you want to achieve during your sales pitch. Second thing, don't talk too much. You know, you want to make sure that you're connecting with the person you're selling to. So ask them a lot of questions to really find out what their needs are. Memorable stories. You know, the way we connect with people is through sharing anecdotes and stories. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, if you go in there and all you have are facts about the apparel or what you're selling, but you don't have case studies about how you help someone do something extraordinary with those products to help their business marketing efforts, then you're not going to get anywhere. Right, Joe?
Absolutely. You know, the power of observation, when you go to someone's office, you have to look around. I'm very observant and I see a lot of different things. So, you know, as a sales rep, you got to be got that eagle eye out.
Yeah,
see
Joe,
what's
you notice
there.
When people get their hair cut like half an inch.
Well, isn't that, you know? But isn't that nice? Isn't
it is.
Nice,
it's unnerving. It's unnerving.
Well,
but
isn't it nice when someone says, you got your hair cut, it looks very nice?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you want someone to recognize your haircut?
It's unnerving when you say, you know, is that a new shirt? I haven't seen it before. And are they new shoes? And where did you get them?
And Joe knew that I was pregnant, like, what, 7 weeks in? And you were like, I noticed you were wearing looser dresses or something
that
like that.
Suspicious.
It was just like,
you're like a girl.
But it's
no, it's good.
But I mean,
it's
the
good
point
for the trade we're in.
Right. And the point is that, you know, you have that emotional connection. I mean, one of the embroiderers I talked to said that she always has pictures up on her walls. And when people come in, she said invariably someone will be like, oh, is that your dog? Is that your daughter? And then and that's a really and she said that emotional connection is what really fuels the relationship. So by doing that, that's probably one of the most important things that you can do.
Well, thank you, Nicole. And I noticed that Michelle is still cranky. that's the PG version of the words I'd like to use. Okay, since we have Nicole still up to the microphone, we're going to go to an email question we have, which is a very good question.
Okay.
Why is the left chest area the standard imprint area? And this comes from Leah via email.
What I've heard is that when you shake someone's hand and you're facing them, that's the place that your eye most often goes. So you put out your right hand and then you kind of look at the left chest. That's the most common thing that I hear. But like I said, you know, the logo placement, I mean, left chest is it's standard. That's what I hear. But like I said, there are so many other places that you can put it because people kind of get sick of that. The other thing, one of the reasons that the logo placement is kind of moving is because women don't like feeling like people are looking at their chest. So that's why if you put, you know, if you've got a polo and you put the logo on the collar or above the hem or even on the back, it's a little bit more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. If you watch golf, you'll notice there's this one golfer, I don't know if you ever heard of him, Tiger Woods. His Nike logo is actually on his back because a lot of times with a follow-through, a swing, mm-hmm. you actually see that part of the shirt very often or when they're looking down at a hole and the cameras are from behind. So traditionally it's on the left chest, but for Tiger, they know it gets so much exposure, they put it on the back. All right, we're going to move on to Michelle, the ever-delightful Michelle. And she's got something to have a deal with different types of interviewers.
Yes. Well, studies show that people in the next 2 years, more people are going to be leaving their jobs than have in the previous 2 years because the economy will get better. And as we all know, when you go to interview, it really how you do in the interview depends a lot upon the person that you're interviewing with. And there are distinctly different types of interview styles. So you guys tell me if you recognize any of these. There are 10 of them. I'm only going to go through a few. We'll put the rest on our website at asicentral.com/radio. Have you ever had an interview with someone who comes off like your best friend, who's kind of disarming in that they're overly friendly and they try to make you feel, you know, so welcome, almost a little bit too personal?
I don't have that.
I wish I did.
Okay.
Someone's friendly towards you.
Most people are guarded, I think.
Okay. And there are some people, I would say, and maybe that's just their style, mm-hmm. but the thing you need to remember is that, you know, they're not being interviewed, so they can act however they mm-hmm. want, but you know, while you can kind of loosen up a little bit because that person is setting the tone, mm-hmm. you really shouldn't drop your guard altogether. You are the one being interviewed. You have to maintain a certain level of decorum. Another one is the rule follower. Now, this person, I would say, would be from the Joe school of thought, where this person notices everything, follows the rule book as far as, you know, they look for, does the person give the right handshake? Are they dressed appropriately for a job interview? You would notice something like that.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think
true.
That you should have a nice, firm handshake, whether you're male or female. I think that you should dress appropriately for it. That doesn't necessarily mean
mouth.
Like a pinstripe, you know, suit with, you know, a white shirt and a tie. I mean, You can go with a blazer and without a tie. It all depends. But, you know, yeah, I mean, there is an appropriate way to dress. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And when you encounter someone like this, who would I would say would be the complete opposite of the first person who was, you know, so kind of,
casual,
you know, wanted to be your friend and, you know, wanted to, you know, had more loosey-goosey standards, you really need to step up your game and be very rigid in, you know, how you respond to their questions and, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that you're following through on all the protocols. The next one would be the weirdo. I'll take
all
that
right,
one.
Yeah. Let me hold a mirror up for you.
Those are
here.
The most fun.
This would be the person that you go into their office for an interview and you notice things like, you know, macaroni art hanging in their office. And, you know, in the middle of asking standard questions about a job, they'll come out with something completely out of the blue, like, you know, who is your favorite member of the A-team? And in that case, you have to realize, unless they're asking something really creepy or offensive, the person may just be a little bit of an odd eccentric, and you just kind of have to go with it. Again, it doesn't mean you have to go down to their level and be equally as, you know, weird and eccentric, but just, you know, you can loosen your style up a little bit. And the last one I'm going to talk about is when, and I have had this experience, when you get interviewed by more than one person, when you get interviewed by, you know, three or four people, and that can be a little intimidating, and that's called the mafia effect, where you kind of sit in front of the firing squad. And in that case, you just kind of have to suck it up, and you're going to have to answer many questions from different types of personalities, and you just kind of have to, you know, dial down your approach to each one and, you know, just address what they're asking head on.
Sure. Eye contact, I would think.
Yeah, I was
eye
just going to say.
The key is don't appear to be, you know, frazzled or, you know, unnerved or flummoxed.
When I interview people, the last thing I do, and I suggest that anyone who interviews does this, and if you're going to go on an interview, pay attention. I always give them a business card because I know it can be very nervous, you know, nerve-wracking to sit there and be grilled, you know. So I always say, if you have any more questions, you can either call me or send me an email, and I'll get back to you right away. What I'm looking for, if now I've given them my email
address,
will
they reach out to you?
Will they reach out and say, thank you very much, I appreciate the time that you gave today? And for me, that's very big.
Yeah, and people who don't do that, I write them off.
I think that's standard nowadays.
Yeah, it is.
There has to be follow-up.
It is so easy. And if you're going on an interview, boy, you better research the company. It's so easy to find out, you know, what your potential employer does. And I can't believe that people actually come in and don't know anything about what they're interviewing about.
See, maybe I'm a mean person, but if I were interviewing someone, I wouldn't give them my business card. I would expect them to find out what my email address is or contact information and see if they're willing to put in a little bit of effort to contact me after the fact.
I'm not as
That's
evil.
Just me.
I'm not as evil as Dave. I'm a sweetheart.
I'm a bad person.
You know, I get a bad rap in here, but hey, I love everyone. All right, well, Michelle, thank you very much for that. And we're going
to
go across the table now to Dave, and he has
the mean guy.
10 business management practices to ask.
That's right. I'm going to give you 5 of these 10, and we'll put the rest on the web for you. Number 1, get rid of front-loaded recruiting systems. And these involve a ton of online tests, personality tests, questionnaires, sample assignments that you try to over-evaluate a potential employee. What you should do instead is give the power to your hiring manager. You know, include the human element in this instead of all these tests. Get rid of that. Number 2, get rid of overdone policy manuals, which is one of my pet peeves. They create fear and restrictions among your employees. That's a no-go. Number 3, get rid of the social media police. You know, hey, if your employees want to check Facebook once in a while, that's a good thing. You don't have to stop them and block all these sites. Number 4, mileage theft. If your employees are going to be out and about trying to sell your product, don't remove or take their frequent flyer miles. Let them have those frequent flyer miles. And number 5, get rid of timekeeping strategies. Give your employees assignments. Let them have some free time. Give them responsibilities, but don't have them get there at 6 o'clock in the morning, then expect them to be there until 10 o'clock at night to finish a project and come back the next day at 6 o'clock. You have to be flexible in time, and that's going to give your employees motivation to get the job done right. So that's sort of my mini rant, 5 of the 10 employment management practices to X.
Well, very good. I mean,
agree with them all.
Yeah, we have a very, very
say it,
good time policy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, people come in a variety of different times. I am involved in sports organizations, so I need to get out of here by 5 o'clock. So I come in early. I put a little extra time in the beginning of the day. So, you know, I don't mind doing that. It allows me to get the job done and to leave at 5 o'clock and not feel that I'm leaving too much stuff on my desk that, you know, need to get taken care of. So
sure.
I appreciate that.
So do I.
And Michelle, what time did you get here today?
I got here at 9. Shocking.
I know. It is shocking. All right, Steve, cue the Olympics music, please.
Joe, get your torch.
I'm bearing a torch. Anyway, okay, I have here in front of me some of the Olympics' quirkiest sponsors, and we are going to start with probably the greatest Olympic sport going on right now. We are mesmerized by it at my house. We were talking about it prior to the show starting, and that is curling. There is something about this sport where we cannot stop watching it. So they actually have a sponsor, and the sponsor is Kodak Technology Group. Has nothing to do with curling and has nothing to do with the product that they are giving out. They've put 100,000 of these in the Olympic Village, and that is Harry Hard condoms. Now, Harry Hard is a term, Dave, don't roll your eyes. It's a term that they use for the sweepers in curling. They tell them to Harry Hard, which means to sweep harder so that the stone will go further.
Who would have thought curling would have so much innuendo?
It is a great sport. Okay, here's four others I'm going to hit you. Chums is the U.S. ski and snowboarding team's official lanyard supplier. Hmm. And Chums is actually an industry supplier, if anyone's interested. And the reason they got involved with the skiing and snowboarding team is the company's president's father was an alpine skier in the 1960 and 64 Olympics. So they have a connection there. This is one that I really like. Vulcan Global Manufacturing Solutions. I guarantee I'd give you 100 guesses, and no one could guess what they are a sponsor of and what they do. All right, you ran out of guesses. They are the official lead weight for the U.S. luge team. And what they do is the lugers can either put them on their sleds or they can attach them to their suits with duct tape, which is another sponsor of the U.S. Olympic luge team. And these lead weights actually have a logo stamped in them. So that's pretty funny. Dermatone. Does anyone know what Dermatone is?
Something for the skin.
Yes, it is the official lip balm and sunscreen sponsor for the U.S. ski and snowboarding team. And they don't have an official sponsor agreement where they could put signage in the Olympic Village or have it seen on TV, but they are giving the athletes these kits that do have some sunscreen and lip balm as well. And finally, New Wave Enviro. They are the official stainless steel water bottle of the U.S. ski and snowboarding team. This is another industry company. And these bottles are also going to be sold at Whole Foods and Sprout stores nationwide. So there's some of your quirky and fun Olympic sponsors.
Boy, those mittens are all over the place, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the hottest product now going.
It's got the maple leaf
It's got the maple leaf, and it's the red mittens. That's one of the hottest, you know, little Olympic products going. So get your Olympic gear on. Your TVs out. No, not O Canada. We're not Canadian here, David. Although we do love our neighbors from the north, we want to see the U.S. take all those gold medals. All right, we're going to go back to Nicole now, where she has top survival tips for remote work teams, and she works 2 days.
I do, and I was going to say, you know, it's great because I come into the office 3 days, I work at home 2 days. However, I do often work very late at night or in the middle of the night, which I appreciate because I'm a night owl. So with more and more people working offsite at different times, you know, you really have to kind of create a sense of team, you know, team, I guess, togetherness. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you're not in the office, you can kind of get paranoid. Like, what's going on? You know, like, is there a big party? You know, are people having cocktails?
There's never anything going on, Nicole. Let me end the suspense. There's never anything going on.
Right. So let me just give you three quick tips for how to build that team effort. You know, first of all, use online tools like GoToMeeting. We have Twitter now, and it's actually great because we're all using it. And so I scroll through during the day, and I see what people are doing. And it's kind of cool. It helps me feel like I'm connected to everybody. You know, not that I'm not connected in my heart, but... the second thing is that everybody has to know what you're working toward. So if you're at home and, you know, we're all working on these supplier CDs, which I know Michelle really enjoyed.
Love them.
So we were all working on them and we all had a common goal that we're creating this great new supplier kit. And so if you know that, it's easier to work at home and to feel like you're part of something. And then, of course, you know, recognize people if they're in the office, if they're out of the office based on their accomplishments. So...
I think the opinion of people working at home has changed over the years. I mean, people used to kind of look at it like, you know, oh, are they really working
right
at home? Are they slacking off? I think it's much more accepted nowadays, you know, because of so many people telecommuting.
Yeah, and I think if you have the setup, I mean, I hook up to the VPN so I can hook into my office computer. And the funny thing is that I get on the computer even earlier than I would be here, and I work through lunch and stuff. So I think I get more done at home sometimes, though. So. But I think the key is just to make sure that people working at home are really connected to the goals in your office and just make sure that they're recognized just as much as people in the office.
It's a huge cost-cutting strategy,
right,
too, for a lot of companies. I mean, they get to save on office space. They get to save on supplies by having their employees work from home.
Yeah, I agree.
But unfortunately, Nicole missed that champagne party we had last Friday.
You're going to work awesome. Home 4 days a week.
Yeah. Awesome. Five.
Well, Nicole, thank you, and thank you for being in studio with us today.
I'm happy to,
that we have you here rather than working remotely today. And we got one final story here. Dave is going to tell us about Facebook fan pages an effective marketing.
Joe, there is evidence that Facebook fan pages can create brand loyalty. This comes from a Rice University study. Researchers surveyed customers of a Houston restaurant chain that prior to this study did not have a Facebook fan page. The study found that among those who became Facebook fans of the restaurant, 36% made more visits to the restaurant chain, 33% spent more money at the restaurant, 14% had higher emotional attachment.
I just say, who has time to do that?
And 41%, my favorite, had greater psychological loyalty. So this restaurant was always on the minds of the Facebook fan page
friends. That's pretty good.
Now, this is one study, of course, but it was conducted over 3 months. It was among 1,700 people, so decent sample size. I think the lesson is, it doesn't hurt. If you're trying to market your company to have a Facebook fan page, you're going to get fans and people are going to recognize your brand a little more easily. And if these numbers turn out to be anywhere near true, to have 33% more people spending money at your restaurant compared to others, that's a number that you can't ignore if you're a business owner.
Well, maybe the Joe Show needs to have a Facebook fan page.
Well,
I think it should.
I like it. Well, coming up very soon, Successful Promotions fan page will be up and operational. And there you can go and see End Buyer Safe Joe Shows, where we talk. The regular Joe Show that goes out on Promogram on Tuesdays talks to the distributors and how they can sell these products to their clients and how they can present them and what type of promotions and programs they'd be good in. The End Buyer version is very similar, but it speaks directly to the end buyer and how their companies can use them and what type of audiences they can target with certain products and what type of promotions and campaigns they can use them in. So
versatility in the Joe Show.
Versatility. So coming soon, the Successful Promotion fan page. Well, we are out of time today. Unfortunately, I don't have an opportunity to rant, but we'd like to thank our sponsor, I Promote You. Thank everyone for listening. If you're on the West Coast, please get out to ASI San Diego. You still have time to register. Education's tomorrow and 2 days of exhibit following on Thursday and Friday. We'll see you next week.